Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts.
My private list of places you have to eat before you die includes a former gas station in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. It's Crook's Corner Cafe and Bar, and it's made brilliant by Chef Bill Smith. This guy is an icon to all who revere great Southern cooking. And this is why Bill is our latest Key 3 chef, that is, one of our picks of the best cooks in the country. We ask each to tell us about the three key recipes they feel every cook should know. It's a one-on-one masterclass. And it doesn't get more unintimidating than working with Bill. He's so laid back, you might not realize what he's achieved until you notice the awards lining a small wall near the bar. Crook's Corner is pure retro. It's small, it's got white walls, and 1950s chrome and formica tables. It's a place to have fun. While back in the small kitchen, Bill's worked with the same crew of Latino cooks for years. They're family. And that's where he was when I knocked on the screen door to the kitchen.
Sweet Dima, North Carolina, gave your daughter to me. She left me on that corner staring, knocked the wind out of me.
I'm delighted to see you again. Welcome to the kitchen. You ever been back this way?
No, I've never been in the back door.
Sweet Dima, North Carolina, gave your daughter to me.
Bill, yes. Key three recipes. What are your key three recipes for people who cook?
Okay, well, being from Eastern North Carolina, I'm going to say fried oysters, banana pudding, and collards.
Wow. Why fried oysters, banana pudding, and collards?
They're things I grew up on, and that's just what I think of when I think back. And it's sort of the foundation of what I do still.
Uh-huh. So where do you want to begin?
All right, we're going to fry some oysters.
This is not a bad thing.
Yeah, no, this is a good thing.
Okay.
I'm going to fly into the face of some people's opinion. I'm going to produce a batter with lots of crust.
Why? Tell me about this.
Oh, people say, oh, this is all bread. This is all, you know, you can't taste anything for the crust. And yeah, right.
So there's
I do my fried chicken that way, too.
I mean, there are crust people and non-crust people.
People that see crust as sort of like some sort of minefield to get around on the way to the food. And others that, see, I love that.
But will I still be able to taste the oyster?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you've got, all right, so we've got, we're
okay,
in the kitchen.
We're in the kitchen. We have self-rising flour.
Okay, white lily.
White lily, self-rising flour.
I always think of white lily means the South.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it used to be made in Knoxville. I think it's been bought up by somebody now. But and then we've got my Seca, as a hat tip to my friends from south of the border who also work for me. And I discovered, this is interesting actually, I discovered this recipe by accident in a way. We always had, when growing up, we always had cornmeal.
Yeah.
One time I was in New Orleans, and you know in New Orleans and Louisiana, they have all these brands that everybody loves, but you can only get them there.
Yeah.
So I went through the French Market on my way to the airport, really, and I grabbed all this stuff, and I got a seafood breader. And about a month or two later, we said, let's use that. So we fried this stuff, and we said, God, this is so good. What is this? But by then, the wrapper was in the dumpster, so I had to go out in the dumpster and fish through the trash, pull it out, and it said corn flour instead of cornmeal, right? So I used corn flour for years, and then one year I ran out when I needed it, and I ran to the corner store, where there's a Mexican store in the corner, and they had Maseca, so it's the same thing. And so now we use Maseca because that's the best of all right. The...
So this is really... Yeah. I'm feeling it. This is ground corn.
Yeah, this is for tortillas and tamales and stuff. We're going to use it tonight.
So
when
it also has been treated with lye.
Yes, and it smells like it, yeah.
It smells like it.
Yeah.
So you're mixing...
Yeah,
so because you're most of your staff here is from Mexico, right?
Yes.
So...
Si o no way. Okay, so basically what you do is just half and half.
So you've got a big, even had a nice square stainless steel. This is your mixing bowl.
Yeah.
And it's half self-rising flour.
Which I'm trying to
and half of
half this
the
corn flour.
The corn flour.
Yeah, you can get anywhere.
Yeah,
now.
Right.
And you mix it together. And like I said, I haven't measured anything in years, so I just sort of eyeball
it. Okay.
And then this is a salt and pepper blend. And I like oysters to be salty myself, so.
Well, they are salty. They come from the sea,
anyway,
right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, generous sprinkling of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and
you're
mixing it with your hands.
Mixing it with my hands.
Right,
and I probably
stick
my finger. Every time I give a class, I always end up sticking my finger in it and tasting it. And I warn everybody in the beginning. I said, okay, I'm here we go.
It's going to be fried in very hot oil.
In very hot oil.
Now, you just threw a bit of that flour mixture into the oil. What are you looking for?
Just to make sure that it's hot enough. You can sort of look at it. It just fries real quick.
So when it comes up and fries
real
quick and then browns.
If it's too cold, then they'll be all sogged out. You don't want that.
Okay. So when I'm heating my oil at home, I can drop a little bit of that flour and it's going to go golden?
Well, it'll bubble, basically, what you're seeing.
Okay.
Yeah, and it will come to the top.
What temperature are you looking for?
They say between 360 and 370.
Okay.
All this stuff is so old, who knows what it really is, but it's set on that. You just sort of watch, you know, no, this doesn't look so good, let's turn it up sort of thing.
I see. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, but that's usually a normal frying temperature.
That's the science.
So these are fresh shucked oysters.
These are fresh shucked oysters from Grantsboro, North Carolina, which is down near where I'm from. And actually,
Southern North Carolina, right? Yeah. It all gets very confusing, but...
Well, you know, the East is very different from the West in North Carolina, I think. They're both nice, you know, but I'm an Easterner. My great-grandmother grew up at Cape Hatteras, so I'm way East.
Well, I understand in barbecue it makes a huge difference.
Fights.
Yes, exactly.
Don't go there.
So now you're dropping...
Yeah.
There's about a dozen oysters you've just dropped into... the flour mixture.
Uh-huh.
There's no liquid, no egg.
No, if I'm with larger seafood, like when we do soft shell crabs, I put them in buttermilk.
But this, you just put the flour mixture.
This is pretty much it. And you want them to be well coated.
Okay, so now
trash can.
Now you're actually dropping these directly into the fat.
No. You have to be very careful because you don't want to crowd them.
So
and when we're busy, we're a lot less careful than I'm being right this second.
But you're taking the fryer basket, the big rectangular basket.
So usually I hang it over the trash can, but it seems to have vanished right this minute.
So I'm making
a mess on the table, but that's
all right. So what you're doing now is you're just lining up the oysters. They're barely touching.
Yeah, you don't want them to be crowded because you'll make a dough rather than a crust.
And you'll have one large oyster fritter.
Yeah.
And those are going into that basket.
The oil. Ready?
Oh, that sizzle.
There you go. And they cook very quickly. And there's a couple of, I like them a little underdone, but most people seem to prefer them a little brown. So I'd go with the public on this.
I have to say, I like my oysters, my fried oysters, very juicy inside, but crispy on the outside.
Well, these are a good size for that. So we should be able to manage that. And it's just, you just eyeball it. And in a second, they'll be all pretty and brown. And
this is fry country, isn't
this
it?
This is fry country. We do fried chicken all summer, but I serve it cold. I fry it in the morning and then let it sit all afternoon.
And it doesn't get soggy.
No. See, I've always thought that one of the best things that can happen to you is to find cold fried chicken in your refrigerator the next day. And then one day when I thought, wait a minute, you're the boss. You can just do that if you want to. So we have cold fried chicken and potato salad and a big slice of watermelon. And cucumbers and onions, and then whatever else, maybe sliced tomatoes, and it's called a picnic.
How does that sound good?
Picnic plate. We do it all summer long.
That sounds swell.
As soon as the watermelons are up.
These oysters they've risen to the surface of the oil, and they're all
prickly.
They look like porcupines.
Yeah.
And they're just sizzling away.
Yeah, yeah.
And turning golden. You know, it's really, I mean, this is really exciting to see.
I'm thinking,
oh my.
Then you think, that looks good.
Oh, they're big.
Yeah, they're
fritters.
Nice guys. All right, and I'm going to sit there 1 second, and then I'm going to.
They've been pulled out of the oil, and now they're just sitting over the oil draining.
For just a second, and I'm going to grab this bowl. Look at the mess I made. This bowl that's lined in a rag. A clean rag, of course.
A clean rag, yes.
And let them drain a second longer.
So that's to pick up any extra fat.
Yeah. And then we're going to hit them with some sea salt.
So coarse sea salt.
Yeah.
So you get that crunch.
Yeah. Okay, so now I think I've got a lemon or two over there. We serve these with all kinds of things.
Here you go.
Some people like cocktail sauce. Some people, we make a sort of a garlic mayonnaise out of roasted garlic. It's like a roasted garlic aioli. Lemons. And lately, and actually I'm doing this tonight with our tamales, sriracha sauce stirred into mayonnaise. Which
is
really good.
Yeah, but you know, you've got beautiful oysters. You don't want to mess around.
I'm just going to do lemons with these.
Yeah. That took, from start to finish, what is this?
Zero.
Yeah, I mean, 10 minutes max?
Even, yeah.
And we're talking.
And we're still talking all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, is that fabulous.
Isn't that nice?
Right. So you've got wedges of lemon, a bowl of the fried oysters tucked with wedges of lemon, The coarse salt, that's it. That's and they're it. Beautiful. They're right, like golden every, brown and crumbly looking.
People love these. I only serve them in cool months. I grew up, that's another thing, growing up, we didn't eat oysters in the summer. We didn't eat them in hot weather. Now, I've had oysters in Louisiana where it's warm all the time. I think they're fine. It's the prejudice I have that I can't seem to get over. Plus, I rotate things in and out. People have things to look forward to and stuff.
Bill, let's get out of the hair of everybody here in the kitchen so they can get back to work, eat oysters, and talk about your other key three.
That's true.
So the other two of your key three.
Collards and banana pudding.
Yeah.
And like I said, they're things I grew up with. And you asked for something elemental. And collards, I thought of first, honestly, because that's something that Southerners or people that grew up with them really love them. And a lot of people can't ever get to like them. So we go through gallons of collards. I probably cook collards every other day here. And when I was growing up, my great-grandmother, who was the big cook in our family, always said you weren't supposed to use them until after the frost. And she would put hers in the freezer if she got them before frost, for a while.
Really?
Yeah. But I have found here, because I have to have them all the time, that's not necessarily true. They may be better having been hit by the frost, but we cook them all summer, all winter, and whatever. Mm-hmm. So, we tear them up by hand, wash them in warm water, which is interesting.
Why warm water?
I don't know. That's just because I was told to
do. That's how you do
that's
it.
What,
that's how
what
you
she
do
said
it.
To do, and that's what I do. Which is, you wouldn't think of doing vegetables that way ordinarily. So anyway, we wash them in warm water. And then, depending on what you have, often I have country ham, but I don't always. And sometimes I have the bone, I don't always. But I always have bacon. So we do, dice up onions and begin frying it in the in some bacon grease with some of the bacon.
Right.
You don't brown them, you just sort of soft, soft, not brown, that whole thing. Then the collards go on top. And then we throw in whatever ham thing I happen to have. It might be the bone. It might be the end pieces we couldn't use that wouldn't slice pretty. It might just be the rind.
Uh-huh.
It could be anything.
But you want some of that smoky, salty flavor of some sort.
And it's a very powerful seasoning, country ham is. I love it. And I'm always like picking the little fragments out of the pot.
If you couldn't get ham, could you use a little bit of a ham?
Oh, yeah, you can use
a smoked hock or
hock
like
jowls
that.
Yeah, or right. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You can use anything you want. That's just what we have most often, and it's sort of traditional. You put maybe a palmful of crushed red pepper flakes.
Ooh.
But it doesn't make them real hot, but it's interesting. People's tastes have changed. When I first came to work here, which has been a long time ago now, people would complain if things were too spicy. Now people complain if they're not. So America's taste has changed considerably.
Intriguing,
I've been here 17
isn't
years.
It?
People always say, these collards are too hot, but now they say they don't. They ask for, like, Tabasco or something.
Interesting.
So then they boil. Now, there's many sort of schools on this. I think they need to boil. We probably cook them 2.5-3 hours, and that's at a hard boil.
So you're really making them, turning them into almost a cream.
Well, no, they stay.
They hold their...
Yeah, they do.
So how much liquid did you put in that pot?
You cover them.
You cover them with water?
Yeah, cover them with water, with a little room for them to float, but not so much. I mean, we cram them in that. In my biggest pot, we
and
just
cram it.
And they wilt. They wilt down to nothing,
And you've removed the stems?
If you need to. Sometimes when they're big, you need to. If they're small, you don't need to.
Okay.
And we just sort of rip them up by hand.
Right.
And the stems sort of come out, if they're big, if they're tough and woody.
You really cook by the instincts of what you were raised with.
Sort of, And I didn't, I didn't start out to be a chef, and it's interesting. But I guess I paid attention to all the people that were around me. I grew up in a time where everyone would go to grandmother's house for lunch every day. We'd leave school, we'd leave work, and everybody would go there, and she would cook lunch for everybody. If you put your name in the pot in time, then you were expected to show up at noon. And, and we had big, nice lunches. That was called dinner in those days. But and that's what we did. So it was always been a part of my life, long before I realized I would be doing it for a living. So
how do you serve the collards?
Well, by themselves, essentially. They're a side dish. You can order them as a side, or you can. They come with a sort of a southern sampler we do with barbecue and cornbread. And they get a dish of those with that. We put a little shredded parm on top of ours, which is unusual, I think.
So elegant.
Isn't it?
So elegant. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Okay, but key question with the collards. Serve them with the liquor or without the liquor?
With. And sometimes I just take the juice and pour it over rice. My great-grandmother believed that it was like medicine. And often if you were sick and there were collards in that, she'd get a cup of that at bedtime or something.
I could imagine.
Yeah, and she always said
from
the reason,
a cup, right?
Yeah. She always said the reason that the
poor Southerners survived the Depression was because you can grow collards anywhere. They'll grow at the front steps, they'll grow in the shade, they'll grow, you know, in whatever the weather and whatever. And she said everybody could throw collard seeds out in the yard, and that's how we lived, got through the Depression, she said.
So now your third key recipe is banana pudding. And I must say I was a little puzzled. I know it's very popular, but why banana pudding?
Well, it's something I grew up with, but it's also something that our public demands be on our menu. Like, I used to just do it occasionally. And people would come in and say, where's the banana pudding? You know, what's going on? And so finally, I just sort of gave in, and now it's on every single day. It doesn't make any sense as a recipe, really. You think about it. It's cookies and bananas and custard. A lot of times you think, who in the world thought of this? You know, but anyway, you always use vanilla wafers. You know, Nabisco vanilla, vanilla wafers. Not to do a commercial, but that's what you got to use.
So you would never use homemade wafers?
Oh, no. Everybody says, why don't you make your own? The only time, there's one dispensation, there was a woman from New Orleans that she had that wonderful bakery in the Marigny called La Spiga, Dana Logston, I think her name was. Uh-huh. And she brought us to the Southern Foodways Alliance. I'm in that. And we had a meeting in Oxford, and she came and made banana pudding for us. And she made her own ginger snaps for it. And that was fantastic. So she gets dispensation, but otherwise I wouldn't drink it.
Yeah, people would not probably.
Well, it was really good. I mean, I have to hand it to her. So that was a smart thing. Anyway, these cookies, there's also two schools about, do you want it fresh or do you want it to have sat? Because it sogs out a little bit when it's a day old. And there's even a song by Southern Cultural on the Skids called Day Old Banana Pudding. Because there's two camps of which is better. I happen to like both.
But I can think of, but I can see how the pudding seeps into the cookies.
Yeah. It's like a trifle after it's old.
Yeah.
But it's also
something
nice about finding the crispy cookies in that custard, which is essentially pastry cream.
So you make the pastry cream?
Yeah, I make that. I use one that has cornstarch because I don't like the taste of the flour, which seems to... I can always taste it. I don't know why. But,
right.
And it's just vanilla pastry cream, basically. Eggs. We use half and half in the one here, sugar, and a pinch of salt and the cornstarch, and bananas, sliced bananas and vanilla wafers. And then on top, you make meringue, and then you put it in the, you sort of smear it on in a dramatic way with all those little swirls and stuff on top of the pudding after you've assembled it, which is essentially layering all those things together. And you put it in the oven and brown the top.
So really what you're talking about here is that you're learning to make a custard,
yes.
Right? Which you can make and use.
There are lots of ways.
Lots of ways.
Yeah. It's basically small.
Yeah. And if you choose to make your own cookies, there's
you may certainly have learned that, yes.
And also, but you're learning to make a meringue.
Yeah.
And the idea of running it into the oven, which gives, I mean, you could put anything under a meringue, run it into the oven, and people are going to think they're feasting on the food of the gods. But a really great banana pudding is the food of the gods.
Yeah, it's just one of those.
So we could call this a Southern essential.
I think so. Yeah, I think so, certainly.
Bill, thank you.
Not at all. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you in the kitchen.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.